Judge Rollison, Judge Bybee, and Judge Burns. My name is Richard Martinez, and it's my privilege to be here representing Lado Alvarado. May it please the Court. We find ourselves asking you to answer a question for the Ninth Circuit that is critical to victims of retaliation who arise, that retaliation arises in the Americans with Disabilities Act. We have a situation in our country where there's a split, and there's a split that is yet unanswered with respect to what role, what rights a victim of discrimination will have specific retaliation under the Americans with Disabilities. We know that in the 10-year period, fiscal year 1997 to fiscal year 2007, there were over a quarter million individuals who submitted charges of discrimination to the EEOC on the basis of discrimination by the Americans with Disabilities. We also know that just in fiscal year 2007, there were over 26,000 claims submitted to the EEOC of retaliation on the basis of all statutes submitted. And that's Stanislav Alvarado is one of those victims. On the eve of trial, he was denied that opportunity to have those rights that are provided under the 1991 Civil Rights Act.
Counsel, one circuit court has answered this question.
Kramer, Your Honor.
And not in favor of your client's position. Tell us why we should create a circuit split and rule the other way.
Yes, Your Honor. There are a number of reasons. The Kramer decision, Your Honor, is, with all due respect, I think it was simplistic. It was too rigid. It failed to appreciate the complexity, the structure of the statute, the structure and the interrelatedness of the Americans with Disabilities Act with Title VII and with the Civil Rights Act 1991. It was contrary, clearly contrary to the intent of Congress. At every instance, Congress has enunciated several critical factors. One of those has been that the remedies available to victims of discrimination under the ADA, the retaliation of similar basis, are to be coextensive with Title VII. They said that was passed into that act in 1990. In addition, they have always tied to 2005 the damages or the remedies that are available. Shortly after passage of the act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, Congress then passed the 1991 Civil Rights Act.
But counsel, in that act, there is a list of remedies. You know, there's a list of causes of action for which compensatory and punitive damages lie. And the section of the ADA that encompasses retaliation claims is not listed. What are we to make of that?
Your Honor, we're talking about section 102, AA2. Of the 1991 Civil Rights Act, and there it's the language that respects to the specific reference to disability. There are several critical points there, Your Honor. First is, if you'll notice in that language, it says that all the powers, remedies, and procedures set forth in section 706 and 717, which is specifically referencing 42 U.S.C. 12.117. If you look, Your Honor, to the 12.117 provision, which is within the ADA, that's the remedies provision, and you look at the retaliation provision, which is at 12203C, 12203 says that the remedies for retaliation shall, and I want to emphasize the word shall, be the same, shall be those that are provided under 42 U.S.C. section 12.117.
That's a general provision. The problem I have is that this is a more specific provision which delineates the sections that allow compensatory and punitive damages. And generally, we will give more credence to a specific provision as opposed to a general provision. So why shouldn't we do that here?
Judge Rollison, Congress did not intend and had good reason not to mention 12203 this portion of the Civil Rights Act. Had it made a listing there of 12203, and if you look at 12203C, you'll note that this whole section provides remedies for retaliation under Title I, Title II, and Title III of the ADA. It is only in Title I of the ADA that we have this reference over to 12.117, and from 12.117 to 42 U.S.C. 2085. So you have to track that. There was good reason for Congress not to mention it, because it was, they had already incorporated by reference, and some of the commentators referred to as the piggyback effect, that retaliation had been piggybacked. There would be that piggyback. In addition, Judge Rawson, to consider that the application can, there's some countervailing canons, not the least of which, this is a remedial statute. Number two is, it creates an absurd result, Judge Rawson. The absurd result here is that we know the Congress has always said that the remedies available to victims of retaliation or victims of discrimination under the ADA, which the executive should be coextensive with those provided under Title VII. Here, by framework, we created an order, an unintended orphan by Congress, that here, when a victim of retaliation, for example, under race, under national origin, under gender, under color, under religion, gets the remedies available under the Civil Rights Act, and yet we're saying to a victim of retaliation, such as that drama, that no, because you have now come under the ADA, that then you don't get your rights to jury trial. You don't get a right to jury.
Counsel, before the Civil Rights Act was amended, 42 U.S. Code Section 2000E-5G1 was the basis for ADA retaliation claims?
Yes, ma'am. And
were compensatory and punitive damages available under that?
No, ma'am.
ADA retaliation claims have consistently been limited to equitable relief. Historically.
Not since passage of the Civil Rights Act.
I mean, I said historically, before passage of the Civil Rights Act.
Judge Rawson, prior to the passage of the 1991 Civil Rights Act, a victim of discrimination, intentional discrimination, stood in the same shoes whether they were under race discrimination, their own gender discrimination, or if they were there.
Well, the Civil Rights Act was actually promulgated to undo some cases that had been decided by the Supreme Court.
That was part of it, Your Honor. There was certainly their attention to atoning and other treatment. But one of the things that the Civil Rights Act did is that it provided meaningful take-home relief to victims of discrimination, including retaliation. And we have to recognize, Your Honor, that retaliation is perhaps one of the most invidious forms of discrimination that exists. It's the cancer within each of these statutes, because it eats away at these statutes being successful, whether it is the person who reports discrimination, or the victim of discrimination, or is the person who testifies or offers information on behalf of that victim of discrimination. If we allow employers to get away, and that's what happens when you eliminate jury trial, compensatory damages, and punitive damages, when you allow them to get away with this kind of act, then you essentially eviscerate the statute. You eviscerate the statute by giving these individuals such funny style of with no
Counsel, going back to Judge Rawlinson's question. So prior to 1991, someone who complained of retaliation would not have been entitled to compensatory damages.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, where in Section 1981 was that cured?
Excuse me?
Where in the 1991 Civil Rights Act was that problem cured?
The problem was cured, Your Honor, with respect to the Americans with Disabilities Act under Section 102A2. And there it specifically provides that individuals who are the victims of intentional discrimination shall be entitled to three things. They're going to be entitled to the rights and remedies available under 42 U.S.C. Section 12.117, and under 12.117, now as amended, you have the right for jury trial, you have a right to compensatory damages, and you have a right to punitive damages, and those are all capped. In this particular instance,
the problem that I have though with that reading is that it renders superfluous the references to the two specific sections in the ADA where Congress is permitting a jury trial, compensatory and punitive damages. It makes that superfluous. Why list two if your argument's correct that, that with this legislation, every section of the ADA was subject to a jury trial and to other than equitable relief?
Your Honor, because it's of the interrelated, it's looking at the structure of the ADA. In Title V of the ADA, 42 SC 12203 does not stand alone. In fact, in 12203 subsection C, what we have is it says that for a violation or for the remedies that you shall seek there, you go back to 117. And 117 takes you to 42 SC 2005. It is in facing that.
But Congress was aware of that interrelatedness when it enacted the legislation as well. So we assume that Congress knows the laws it has enacted. So with Congress's knowledge of the interrelatedness, why would it have, as Judge Burns said, why would it just articulate two sections that would trigger?
Because, Your Honor, had they listed Section 12203 as in this provision, then they would have created a confusion about or expanded the remedies in 12203 in a way that was not intended. Because in 12203, it is not only there the remedies that we find for Title I, but we also find the remedies for Title II and Title III violations of the ADA. And Title II and Title III have separate remedies available to them that are specified in that section. Again, you have to trace each of those provisions to track.
Why did Congress specifically list 102 and 102B5 in 42 U.S.C. 1981 AA2?
Because, Your Honor, they listed it there because it was then making it clear that they were amending 12-117. And by list, and because both of those are for intentional acts, and the intentional act of discrimination or to accommodate.
Section 102 is 42 U.S.C. 12-112, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that doesn't amend 12-117.
It does, Your Honor, because up above where it amends it is that it says that.
I see where you are.
The Mental Disabilities Act of 1990, the 43rd section 12-117 is amended, and then it comes down below and specifically says for violations of the 102 provisions that you've talked about, 102 and 102B5.
Counsel, what inference should we take from the fact that Kramer is a couple of years old, that it has caused a split among, at least among district courts, we don't yet have a circuit split with related, and that Congress has not taken any action to correct it?
Your Honor, I think that the failure of Congress should not be interpreted as that this was what they intended. I would say just the opposite, Your Honor. When we have every objective evidence that we have of what Congress intended with the Americans with Disabilities Act is quite the opposite, that they intended that the remedies be coextensive, that they intended that a person with disability suffered.
Right. But why wouldn't,
at the same,
if Congress thought that the Seventh Circuit has messed this up, then why wouldn't Congress go and correct the act to make that clear?
Well, I think that if you look historically, Your Honor, at when Congress intercedes, if we look most recently to the American with Disabilities Act Amendment Act, it was recently passed and enacted in January of this year, that the historical interventions by Congress are essentially to reverse or to overrule decisions of the Supreme Court. And this issue has been on cert to the Supreme Court from both sides and never been accepted. It has always been the position of the Ninth Circuit, I think historically the position of the Ninth Circuit, that when it comes to civil rights statutes, we look at them for what they are. They are remedial statutes. They're broadly and enacted in every instance to effectuate the purpose of the statute. Here, it is to eliminate retaliation. In Panizala, you have compelling evidence of retaliation. You have someone who did their job right for 42 months, and then they find themselves at complaining discrimination of the employee hotline, suddenly being faced with a barrage of discipline. His evaluations were always good. He gets no evaluations after that day. Olivia Garcia reports that the write-ups she did were, in fact, report that they want the truth. You have a second reporting almost a year later in June of 2003, and he again reports about discrimination, and then within a few short days, he's fired. This is a victim of retaliation. This is a general wage employee, Your Honor. The only way you stop employers from retaliating for people who complain of discrimination, report of discrimination, and the employer chooses not to act, but to punish them. The only way you will protect employees who come forward and give testimony to support them is to allow them the remedial section, efforts, the remedies that were intended by Congress. If you look to the full actual grant that completely supports that it puts the context, the structure, and the related statutory provisions, the right to be involved with that which is enunciated by two district courts in the Ninth Circuit and certainly by the Edwards decision from New York. If you look, Your Honors, to the fact that to do anything but to apply 1991A really creates an absurdity, and that absurdity is that we have now created what I characterize as this orphan. And this orphan is one group, just one person who represents many, and it's not on behalf of him, is that he will not have this jury trial. He will not have a jury decide about compensatory damages or punitive damages. And he is someone who, by the court's own rule, has a right to be have a jury decision to go to trial on those issues. Kramer, Your Honors, with all due respect, does that law. It is simplistic. It's too rigid. It is a textual reading of the statute that was never intended by Congress. You have the canons available to read the statute in its interrelated nature and to make whole, to breathe life within the Ninth Circuit. That victims of retaliation will not find themselves on the outs with respect to the remedies available under the Civil Rights Act of 1990, but in fact to be equal partners, be in the same position as those that Congress intended, and that is to be equal with all Class 7
claimants. All right, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Lori Vogel, Counsel for Cajun Operating Systems. There are three primary problems with Mr. Alvarado's position in this case. First of all, the United States Supreme Court and the fundamental canons of construction made it clear that you only look beyond the plain language of statute where it is ambiguous. Here, it is very clear under Section 102A2 of the 1991 Civil Rights Act that Congress only intended to expand or to extend compensatory and punitive damages to certain types of discrimination claims, which included claims under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, including retaliation claims, claims under Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act, and claims for intentional discrimination and reasonable accommodation under Sections 101 and 101B5 of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Congress did not include in that either retaliation provision under the ADA or a claim for retaliation under the Rehabilitation Act, nor did it amend anything with respect to the ADA for age discrimination in employment, either for discrimination claims or for retaliation claims. Congress gets to choose which areas, which types of claims it will expand the compensatory and punitive damages to, and it has done that here, and it has done it clearly. Alvarado's claim for argument relies on a rapidly decreasing number of district court decisions now that Intel in the Eastern District of New York has decided to follow Kramer instead of its prior decision in Edwards. Edwards is the decision that many of the other district courts have relied on for a cycle. And Rhodes, as we know, was overruled by the Fourth Circuit, albeit in an unpublished opinion.
Counsel, what do you make of the EEOC compliance manual, which appears to support opposing counsel's argument?
The problem with the EEOC compliance manual is that it provides no support whatsoever for that their statement that compensatory punitive damages are available not only for violations for retaliation under the ADA, but also under ADEA, which is absolutely not true. If you look at the footnote in the EEOC compliance manual, it's referencing the Fair Labor Standards Act, and it's really making the point there that they're available under the Fair Labor Standards Act, and then tag on, as well as under the ADA and ADEA. And under the Chevron decision of the United States Supreme Court, an agency's determination can only be looked to as persuasive authority where Congress has not explicitly and plainly made its intent with respect to a particular federal statute, and for where it is a reasonable, permissible interpretation. Here, it is not a reasonable or permissible interpretation because, as I said, the EEOC manual does not provide any support for that position. Secondly, I think it's important, and I urge you to look at the Livingston Law Review article that we cited. That was an article that was written in 1993 by the immediate former general counsel of the EEOC, who took the position that clearly, under the plain language of the 1991 Civil Rights Act, Section 102A2, that the only Congress only intended, whether it was an overcheck or whether he indicates there's a strong indication because Congress did extend compensatory punitive damages to retaliation under Title VII, that Congress intended to not extend to retaliation claims under the ADA. Now, whether it's an oversight or whether there's a reason for it, this court has to apply the plain language because it's unambiguous. And as both Burns and one of the other judges commented on, if Congress intended to, in light of and a related nature of these acts, the ADA and the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title VII, if Congress intended to expand compensatory punitive damages to employment discrimination claims under the ADA and including retaliation claims, there were several ways to do it that could have been accomplished. It could have either amended simply the remedies provision under Title VII that Title I and Title V reference via the enforcement provision of Section 12117 of the ADA, or it could have somehow either revised or incorporated it into that enforcement provision, or it simply could have just added in addition to Sections 102 and 102B5 of the ADA, it could also have said, and to Section 503, the Retaliation Act, as limited to claims under Title I, or related retaliation claims pursuant to 503 under Title I. There, if it's inaccurate, the enforcement provisions applied to Title III are not the same as they are for Title I. They are different. They are Sections 12113 and 12188. So revising, there were a couple of different ways that Congress could have revised, either by adding the retaliation section as limited to those provisions, to intentional discrimination for reasonable accommodation under the ADA Title I, 4-5 Amendment 12-113 with the remedy section in Title VII. Congress did not do that. Now, one possible reason is that I mentioned is the fact that retaliation under the ADA retaliation claim is very broad. You don't have to be disabled to bring that claim. Anyone participates in an investigation of a disability claim under the ADA can bring a retaliation claim. Anyone who participates in an investigation. Now, the 1991 Civil Rights Act, we all agree, broadly expanded the availability of compensatory and punitive damages, which Congress even noted, as did Mr. Livingston in his article. Everyone knew that was going to increase litigation. Congress had the opportunity and obviously did choose to limit that litigation, people who have actual disabilities to, under the ADA, to people who had actual disabilities and have reasonable accommodation plans under the Rehabilitation Act, or to people who have claims under Title VII. Congress made its intent clear in that regard, and Kramer and an increasing number of district court decisions and judges have agreed that even though we might want to expand it to an ADA retaliation claim, we can't get past the first canon of construction here.
Counsel, I want to ask you about one of the cases that you submitted on in your 28J letter.
Okay.
The Edwards case from the Eastern District of New York is one of the leading cases disagreeing with Kramer, and you've told us that Infantolino, out of that same district, has adopted Kramer.
That's
now,
correct.
I assume that Infantolino did not overrule. It was actually issued by a different district judge. Is that right?
It was issued by a district judge.
So I think it's conflict in the Eastern District of New York. Do you know whether Infantolino is on appeal to the Second Circuit?
Connor, I apologize. I don't know the answer to that question, but I can find that out for the court and submit it, if you'd like, in a supplement, a very brief supplement.
If we need anything else from you, we will let you know.
So okay.
Please do not submit anything until we hear it.
I think the language in Infantolino, though, is very helpful. You can tell that this judge is also troubled by the fact that in the plain language of the statute, the compensatory and punitive damages do not extend to the ADA retaliation section, but he states, while the result produced by the literal text of the statute is an anomaly, this is not one of those rare cases where I may invoke the need to avoid an absurd result to override the plain language of the statute. So he realizes, and again, an increasing number of district court judges are realizing that might want to reach this result, but we can't do that in the light of the plain language.
Are there any, in this letter, which is dated last week, are you aware of any cases going the other way that have been decided since you briefed it?
Your Honor, I pulled up, I just did general search, and those were the ones that I found. I know that there was a new district court case that Mr. Alvarado cited in his reply brief, I believe it's called Rumler. And Rumler has some of its own issues because it relied on Edwards. It's our position that's obviously there's a split within the New York district. The only other cases, district court cases at this point, that support Mr. Alvarado's position are Oxford, which is Eastern District of California, which, as Kramer pointed out, inserted ellipses where operative language was the specific provisions of the ADA. That absolutely cannot be relied on. The court in Oxford also relied on the United States Supreme Court case in Franklin that basically held that courts may extend all available remedies for violations of federal statutes unless Congress has spoken to the contrary. And so, here clearly Congress has spoken to the contrary. The Leslie Wilson case simply cited the 2nd, 10th, and 8th Circuit decisions, which simply accept the sufficiency of the evidence in support of compensatory punitive damage verdicts and did not directly address the issue of their failure for ADA recalculation claim. I think that the other cases, the only other point I'd like to make, the cases that were cited by appellant with respect to the 9th Circuit and the intent of the ADA, applying, keeping in mind the remedial goals and purposes of the ADA. First of all, those with and discuss the need to broadly apply, for example, the definitions. If you look at the Hazen case, that is just a broad definition of public services to include professional licensing. The Walsh case just simply discussed the parallel nature of the ADA and 7 in many respects, and that was, not discussing the 1991 amendment in extending compensatory punitive damages. And, I just think that it's very clear there were ways Congress could have incorporated either the compensatory punitive damages into the 1991 Civil Rights Act. Made a lot more sense that if it intended them to extend to ADA retaliation claims. The ADA also has very goals and purposes, so does the Retaliation Act, but Congress didn't extend compensatory punitive damages to those either.
And you meant the Rehabilitation Act?
Excuse me, the Rehabilitation Act, thank you, Your Honor. But Congress chose, for whatever reason, to limit it as far as retaliation, only violations under the Civil Rights Act. And because of the clarity and specificity of the language, we need to simply follow Kramer and apply the plain language of the statute. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give you a minute for rebuttal if you need it.
Briefly, Judge, much has been said about the intent of Congress here. There's nothing in the record that indicates one word, not one word from one senator, from one congressman, that they intended to exclude victims of retaliation under the ADA from the 1991 Civil Rights Act.
Well, opposing counsel's position is you don't even get to intent because the plain language governs.
Your Honor, I understand that she takes the Kramer position and the Kramer analysis, and with respect to the commentators that we have submitted to the court for its consideration, there is another that I would offer in asking for if there's any additional to be considered, and it was also submitted in writing. It's statutory leapfrog, compensatory and punitive damages under the retaliatory provision of the ADA. This is in the Missouri Law Review, 74 Missouri Law Review, 173.
I'm sorry, that's 74 Missouri Law Review, 173, and that was 2009?
Winter 2009, Your Honor.
Winter.
Every commentator who's addressed this has come to the conclusion that the wrong result occurred in Kramer and in the analysis applied in Kramer, and they've come at it from a variety of different perspectives.
You've got a number of district courts that are running against you. Do you have anything, any updates for us? Are there any district courts that are running in your favor right now? Anything new that is not in your brief?
I'm not aware, Judge. I ran the courts twice, and I did not find any new decisions other than those that were cited to the court. But I believe that the rumble also persuasive in its analysis and represents one of the more recent decisions that is applied in 1991 to write that. The last thing I'd like to say, Your Honor, I think that I'd like to come back to your question on a number of the cases. If there's no sound standard of interpretation, it requires Congress to speak with extraordinary clarity. And that's the citation to ExxonMobil Corporation, the Supreme Court decision that you'll see in a number of these decisions that do. I think what you have here is two schools of thought, and I'm reminded of a comment that has become much mentioned recently by Secretary Sotomayor with respect to, you know, when is policy made at the district level or at the circuit court level. This is one of those moments. Everywhere you go, you're making policy because you're deciding how the statute applies. The policy, the public policy, is against discrimination, it's against retaliation. The intent of Congress was against discrimination and against retaliation. And we would urge you to read and interpret the statute in a manner that is consistent. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court. That concludes our calendar for today. We will be in recess until 9 o'clock a.m. tomorrow morning.